You're watching a movie, you're reading a book, you're seeing a play, and a guy rides in a white hat. What does that mean? Good guy. Guy's dressed in red holding a pitchfork. What does that mean? Bad guy. How bad, right? Remains to be seen. How do you know this? I mean, after all, you didn't have to think about it. It was an automatic reaction. I said white hat, good guy, black hat, or red dress, pitchfork, bad guy. And I could go through scores, probably hundreds of similar symbols, that you would see them and automatically you would know exactly what they mean. The literary critic Robert Alter, in his book on biblical narrative, on the stories of the Bible, talks about the fact that when we read the Bible to understand the symbols of the Bible, we only have the Bible. What if, he said, 1,000 years from now, there was just one movie left where a guy wore a white hat? And we're all sitting here, and a guy rides in a white hat, and we don't know what it means. So we do what our tradition does, which is we sit around, and for years we debate the meaning of the white hat. And for all we know, we get it wrong. Which is why when we read the Bible, we are at a great disadvantage. Because it's hard to know the world of the Bible if the Bible is all you have. It would be great if we had other books written at the same time that use the same symbols, and occasionally such a thing comes to pass. We have other ancient Near Eastern works that shed some light on the Bible, but not enough. Now, there is a great advantage to this. The advantage to ignorance is you get to guess. You don't know, so you can spend an awful lot of time and ingenuity and interest trying to figure out what it means. And this morning, I'm going to guess. And I'm going to guess about a phrase in particular from the Psalms. And at the end, I hope it will become clear why I've chosen this phrase this morning. Because rather than do our normal short teaching from the Psalms in between the Torah service and Musaf, I decided to do it during the time of the sermon. There are 15 Psalms, Psalm 120 to 134, that begin with the following two words, Shir HaMa'alot, which means a song of ascent, a song of going up. The wonderful or unfortunate part of this is nobody knows what that means, a song of going up. A song of going up where? A song of going up from where? A song of who's going up? And why are they going anyway? Nobody knows. And where nobody knows, learned opinion rushes in. So I have some choices for you. The most obvious, and in some ways, most concrete, is the historical explanation. That is Aliyah. When somebody moves to Israel, we call it Aliyah, going up. Now, is it a literal topographical going up? Are you always, in fact, going to a higher elevation? No. But going to Israel is considered a spiritual elevation, so it could be Aliyah from Egypt, that is, from going to ancient Egypt to Israel, from slavery to freedom. That's a song of ascent. Or it could be going from the Babylonian exile to Israel. That's also a song of ascent. The only problem with this explanation is only one of the Psalms speaks about a geographical going up. So the idea that all of these Psalms are somehow clustered together because they talk about Egypt or Babylonia isn't really supported by the content of the Psalms. But here is an interesting point about the construction of the ancient temple. How many steps do you suppose there were in the temple in Israel? I'll give you a hint. I've only mentioned one number in the course of the sermon this morning. 15. Somebody was listening. If it wasn't Shabbos, I'd give you a reward. 15. And it turns out there are 15 steps to the temple. So it could be that each psalm was recited as the Kohen went up the 15 steps to the temple. There was a psalm for each ascent. But as I thought about it, I realized that in some ways, even if these explanations were true, geographical, or the worship service of the ancient temple, they weren't sufficient. Because after all, the Psalms are songs. And one of the things that you realize if you sing is the more fervent your song, the more passionately you feel a part of the music, the more your voice rises in prayer. So maybe a song of ascent is literally supposed to reflect the practice of singing the songs. That is, as my voice goes up, it is a song of musical ascent towards God. There are, in fact, some instances in literature, although much later, of what you do reflecting what the words are. If that's obscure, if it's not clear what I'm talking about, I'll give you probably the most famous example in modern literature is the beginning of Nabokov's book, Lolita, where he says, "Lolita, the tongue taking a trip of three steps down the palate to tap at three on the teeth." Lolita. And when you say it, what he has written is exactly what you do. Similarly, maybe when you say Shir HaMa'alot, you're supposed to raise your voice. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support this, which makes it a good rabbinic guess. But then there is the deepest, in some ways, and most important of the Shir HaMa'alot explanations, which is, it is an ascent not of the people, not of the individual, and not of the voice, but of the soul. There are two reigning metaphors for faith in the Jewish tradition. One is the metaphor of depth inside of you, in Hebrew, panimiut, where you find God inside, and the other is a metaphor of height, where you find God in the mountain, in the sky, beyond. We as a society are much more oriented towards the metaphor of inner faith, of pnimiut, of insideness, of depth. And that's why you always find people saying, "I find God within me." When I look for God, I look inside myself. But there is a part of me, although sympathetic to that idea, that thinks if you only find God inside yourself, you ought to actually open your eyes. Because there is around us this magnificence, this beauty, this wonder, in which if one raises their eyes from inside to the horizon, you also ought to find God. When the Kotzker Rebbe was asked where his faith came from, he quoted the verse from Isaiah, "Se'u marom einechem u'ru," lift your eyes up and you will see. In other words, a song of ascent is a song of the soul rising, of the soul going up. of what it is that the Israelites were supposed to have found as they circled the mountain of Sinai, which is there is something larger, greater, more wonderful, more mysterious, more worthy of worship than ourselves. And the direction of spiritual journey in the world should not be solely to bring that magnificence down, but to bring us up. Ashir HaMa'alot is a song of the soul ascending. And if the Kohanim, if the priests in the temple sang those songs as they walked up the mountain, or the Israelites sang them as they went up to Israel, then that just reinforces the point. It just makes the ascent general as well as spiritual. And why this morning? Because of what we have already learned. Because in the temple, the metaphor for lighting the flame was to raise the flame. And what is the significance of a light in the Jewish tradition? It is twofold. First of all, it's pnimiyut, it's insideness. Ner Adonai nishmat Adam, the Torah tells us. The soul of a human being is God's candle. So first of all, when you light a light, it is a metaphor for your soul. But there is another light that's not the light implanted in your soul. After all, what was the very beginning of creation? What is the first thing that is made? Light. Let there be light. But when is the sun created? On the first day? Fourth day. That means that there's a light that predates the light of the sun. In other words, there is what the mystics call the primordial light, the light that shines from the beginning of time, the light that we aspire to, the light that is higher than ourselves, the light that doesn't come from within our souls, but can illuminate our souls if, like the candle in the temple, we raise ourselves. We are about to enter the summer. I mean, yes, by the calendar it's already summer, but our school ended this week and everybody knows in their hearts summer doesn't start till school is over. Doesn't matter what the seasons say. And that means that people will be traveling and taking trips and reading escapist literature and seeing escapist movies and doing all the things in the summer that allows us to get away from the normal grind of our lives. And what I want to remind us is that a Shir HaMa'alot, a song of ascent, doesn't work by the calendar. That your soul doesn't go on vacation. That what you do this summer shapes who you are just as you are shaped in October, in January, and in March. Ner Adonai Nishmat Adam, that you carry a candle inside of you, and candles aspire, all flames aspire to go higher. And I hope that you will use part of this summer to learn, to grow, to pray, to dream, to remember the image of a Shir HaMa'alot, of a song of ascent, because in the end, the song of ascent should be the story of a life. It should be what we do with our souls as we pass through this world. that we grow them, we elevate them, we bring them closer to God. The psalms that bear that superscription, that title at the top, that song of ascent, are not only about joy. They're also about struggle and about sorrow and about pain. But, as the best known one of them puts it, the one that is attached to the grace after meals, to the blessing that we say after we've eaten, as that one says, although in the evening there may be tears, in the morning there is joy. As long as we seek to grow our souls, everything that life brings us can spur our ascent, can make us better, can draw us higher, can help us embrace what it is that we know we ought to be, since God gave us the light within and the light over all, so that we could seek to join them together as we ascend. Shabbat Shalom.